Well, everybody, I'd like to call together the first meeting this year of the Housing Policy and Finance and Public Health Finance Division. Hope you all had a good week. This is our first meeting since the other two times that we normally would have held the committee meeting were held by Governor Street and Jackson, I guess. So, anyway, welcome back, everybody. And I know this is a special night for some people, so we've asked to try to go forward, rapidly as well as thoroughly as you can. So we'll try to do that. And that we have two bills on the agenda tonight, as well as a report from the Public Housing, Minnesota Housing Partnership on Public Housing. And I guess we're going to start with that report. And you just want to go out now? We'll wait for it. So, we'll start with a report on public housing. First, Kip Hallbeck, would you like to come in? Welcome to the committee.
All right, well, thank you, Chair Clark. I'm Chip Hallbach, the Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership, and I'm here today to give you a preview of a study that will actually be released in about a month and a half on survey work and some analysis we've done on the state supply of public housing. And the reason that we're doing that is that, as you may recall from the 2007 session, that the public housing in the state is really under some duress because of the continued lack of federal investment in it. And what we wanted to do in terms and checking in with public housing agencies around the state is to find out how they were dealing with the declining federal funding. And we have some materials for you today, and Brooke helped us produce, so I want to make sure people have those. And we, I'll be working off of this PowerPoint presentation, so make sure you have that out and be easier to follow along here. And by way of, and I should say, in our survey work, Lee Rosenberg, our chief researcher, is here, and we were able to get to over two-thirds of the public housing agencies in the state, and representing some 90% of the 20,000 public housing units serving Minnesota. The first is just to ground us all in that public housing is a federal program starting in the 1930s, and Minnesota has embraced it, and has, but the federal government really provided the initial capital to create the housing, and then on an ongoing basis provides operating support in repair dollars or capital dollars to ensure that the housing persists over time. Not much public housing has been developed over the last 10, 15 years, but certainly during the 50s, 60s, and 70s, a lot of public housing was produced in the state. And so you have an idea of the location of public housing in this packet with the color, that there's a couple of maps, and which shows you the location of the public housing on one side in terms of identifying every community across Minnesota public housing exists. On the other side is to give you some idea of the scale of it, to allow you to see which communities have the largest amount of public housing, which housing authorities, I should say, have the largest amount of public housing and which have smaller public housing units running. I think the smallest is about 10 or 12 apartments. And then also Since the PowerPoint, we originally hoped to show this on a screen, but doesn't give you a full flavor of the variety of public housing units. If I can circulate these to colored pictures to just give you an idea of the appearance of public housing across the state of Minnesota. And the last page of that will get into some of the problems that public housing faces. But you can see that from high-rise in Minneapolis, which also has some scattered site housing here shown in St. Paul, that there is just a wide variety of housing units. Turning to the next page to get at, well, who occupies this housing? And as I said, there are some 20,000 public housing apartments in Minnesota, housing 36,000 individuals, low-income, extremely low-income individuals. Most of the public housing heads of households are either elderly or disabled, so it's an extremely important housing resource for that population. But that's not exclusively serving that population. As the number shows in the upper left-hand corner, some 12,000 children live in Minnesota public housing. And as I said, it's an extremely low-income population. The average income is just a little over $12,000. And so really, next to some of the housing serving the homeless population, this is the housing that reaches down to help people who really do not have any other viable housing opportunities. It is a unique resource for the state. Now, and as it says there, it is an aging housing stock. And as the graph in the lower left of the page show, what starts to show the decline in capital funding. So I'll say a couple of words about capital funding and then about the operating funding. There has been, in between 2002 and 2007, nearly a 30% decline in the amount of capital available to public housing agencies across the state to pay for repairs, updating boilers, that sort of thing. And as we found out later from our survey, and also as some of the illustrations show, particularly from Minneapolis public housing, a lot of the problems are immense in terms of the pipes need to be replaced after 30 years of hard use. Public housing is a well-used housing resource, as it said here in the PowerPoint, over 97% occupied. This is, although you may have heard derogatory statements about public housing, for the people who need it and don't have other opportunities, it's critically important. And on page 3 of the set of PowerPoints, in the upper left-hand corner, gives you some idea of the scale. And this is just for the three largest public housing agencies in the state, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. And which combined have identified through their own surveys they've done over $300 million in capital improvements that are needed to keep this public housing going, and that the amount of money available to them coming from the federal government is a tiny fraction of that. At the bottom of that page 3 gets at the other issue. So you have the capital need of public housing, and then it's the operating need. What does it take to keep the lights on in public housing, paying utilities? And there, although the dollar amount has increased over time, costs with public housing have increased that much faster. And although the federal government has stated a commitment to fully fund the need of public housing, As you see in the PowerPoint slide that's in the bottom right of that page 3, which shows at the top line would be 100%. HUD provides an analysis of what it costs to maintain public housing, which varies in terms of the density of public housing and size of units, age of units, that. And for a few years in the early 1980s, it was running at about 100%. HUD was meeting its mandate of providing that level of funding. But after that, and I say HUD, but it's really a combination of Congress and the administration, has not been able to keep up with that level. And you see sort of a choppy period until the last 3 or 4 years, a steady decline in resources of public housing. The residents of public housing pay 30% of their income for housing, so they do participate in the upkeep, but it's up to the federal government to provide between the gap of what it takes to operate and what the residents are able to provide. So I just, again, then on the final page there, in terms of some of the surveys we've done, and you'll hear later from John Ford from the Albert Lea Public Housing Agency or Housing Authority, who operates public housing there, is that there is that this ability to keep up with the capital needs of public housing, to keep the elevators safe and operating, the roof from leaking, and all of that. Mold asbestos is a significant problem in public housing, as when you have time to look at this color brochure, which goes into something, the problem they're facing in New Ulm. All of that has, in culmination, is that this critically important housing resource has is really at risk, which is the theme here of this report, which we've provided you the preview. And I just want to conclude to say a couple of words, which will lead into the next discussion, is to, you know, where do we go from here? And as the state was able in the 2007 budget to step up and provide a first bit of funding for Minnesota's public housing, it was $2.5 million to the state housing agency, which in turn matched that with its own resources for $5 million to help with some of the needs of public housing agencies. And they had went through a proposal process just a couple of months ago and awarded these funds. And we're able to help out a lot of Minnesota's public housing, but when you add up how much public housing there is, what they were able to do with that $5 million commitment was to support less than 10% of the public housing here in the state. So our hope is that while we do the needed work in advocating with our federal delegation to get the national government keep to its promise of that was made many years ago to keep this housing supply operating, that the state does step in where needed just to ensure that if the residents are not harmed, the communities are not harmed, till we turn around the federal picture. And so, in addition, while it was great what was done last year, we do hope that the legislature understands the importance of this resource and look at some of the options here. Representative Nelson has a bonding bill that we endorse, but we also know that the state has limited amounts for bonding, that the supportive housing bonding will be before the state, which is critically important, and that for the homeless population, we do put a priority on that. So we are hoping that while that for this year, that the state housing agency opens up its PARIF program, the Preservation Affordable Rental Investment Program, which has this one-time commitment, but still is funded at a $20 million level over a biennium, that public housing agencies, like other types of agencies with federal financing, can apply and be evaluated by the state housing agency to see if they're worthy and if state investment is justified. And I will conclude by saying that over the long term, you know, public housing is a good place for the use of state bond resource, but also in this particular point of time where we have a need for some economic stimulus, I just any investment in public housing in the repairs of public housing has a great multiplier in its money that can be rapidly spent and to do a good thing while at the same time providing jobs for people. So as this committee and other committees think about putting Minnesota back to work, I think the repair of public housing is a great place to put some of that money. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll see if there are any questions, I suppose.
Any questions from committee members?
Madam Chair, I've had a chance to meet Chip over the last several months. Chip, give your credentials. tell them who you are
okay. And
what you do just to establish.
Sure. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership, and the partnership is a nonprofit organization representing some of the interests of the business community, local governments, and nonprofits to address the full range of state housing needs. And we do that by, in part, doing some research and bringing studies like this before the legislature and advocating for programs running from addressing homelessness to home ownership. But we also do, in partnership with state and federal agencies and McKnight Foundation, provide support to communities and housing development agencies across the state, mostly in greater Minnesota, so that they can do a better job of understanding needs in their communities and figure out how to best go about meeting them. Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Representative Moll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, I was impressed with your presentation. I have a question, Mr. Halbach, based on a bill that we're going to be hearing. Minnesota Housing Finance has suggested to us that, and to our capital investment chair, that that based on the current funding is available for capital construction for emergency shelters. We're trying to build a new homeless shelter in the Bemidji area, and there's many such efforts around the state. And we have tried to get funds from the state to help build that, and they have not been available, though they have now tried to assure that our capital investments here that they are available, which our experience has proved to the contrary. I wonder if you would be willing to speak to that.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Moe. The state agency has a wide variety of programs, but of course, as you know, it's directed by the legislature and how it should use its resources. I don't know of any emergency shelters that the state has put funding into. They've provided some support in for homelessness, the spectrum of homelessness, and certainly supportive housing is now the priority for the state agency. And, you know, there's people here that are better able to respond to it, but it certainly hasn't been a significant or seen within the agency as a significant responsibility that is to provide emergency shelters. They do other things.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, just for clarification, then, I know you didn't ask this before, but you don't know of any capital money that has come from the state agency to help with the construction of a new homeless shelter?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Moe. I can't think of any emergency shelter that's been funded by the state, at least in the last 5-10 years.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I wanted to ask you one question. I was reading on the back page of this handout here that 17% of our housing authorities have either sold or are considering sale of public housing properties. And I think one of the things I learned early on in this whole housing issue is that the investment that we made that created the existing housing units, we can't afford, we don't have the kind of money to recreate those housing units again. And once they're lost, they're lost. And they talk about homelessness. And you guys are the lowest of income people. So this number is astounding. And I guess I'm kind of wondering why some of us didn't know about this before. Is this new information? 17.5% have either sold or are considering sale of public housing properties because they can't deal with the cost burden that's being forced to sell off. What does that mean?
I think as we, you can look at it on either, but as, Madam Chair, as we look at what happened recently, that is in the last 3 to 4 years of the drop-off of the operating support that's provided by the federal government, you find public housing agencies in a pickle, in a predicament. And so they saying, well, and I remember that the president of St. Paul Public Housing, John Dukeman, saying, it's not if we're going to be around, it's who are we going to be able to serve as we try to grapple with these sustained federal cuts. And so a number of public housing agencies have been forced to lay off maintenance personnel, cut back some on other, postpone needed repairs, and it comes to the place where they just have to figure out how can we survive and help some people, and that then, they're able under federal law to sell off these public housing units, and some have been in that place. And that also may be a question you want to get back with John Ford later on, who's, in addition being the president or the executive director of Albert Lease, also the president of NARAL, which is the association of those public housing agencies.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, because I'd actually like a list of what we know about. Where are those?
Mm-hmm.
Who's in trouble here?
Just if I could add one note, I was at a meeting last week where John Gutzman was at, and he did say that because of that state investment by the legislature and the state housing agency that was made in 2007 and allocated very recently, they were able to not sell off, I believe it was 7 of the scattered site units that they were all otherwise earmarked to sell off. And I do know that up in Moorhead, near Moorhead in Clay County, that it was really a life-death issue, so to speak, in terms of either they get some additional money or they're selling off units.
Thank you. We'll probably ask Mr. Ford about that more later. Any other comments or questions from members? Well, thank you. That gave a good basis, I think, for our bills that we're going forward with. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, we will then take our first bill dealing with public housing. We're finding Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the bill I have here before you was referenced by Chip Hallbuck earlier, and I have here to testify with me John Ford, who's president of NARO and the Albert Lee Public Housing Authority. And what the bill is about is $20 million in bonding to provide rehabilitation repair money for public housing units across the state. and as was stated earlier and in your pamphlets there, of the 87 counties in the state of Minnesota, there's only 5 that don't have some sort of public housing facility. This is about preserving assets that we have now, similar to what we use EPRA money for in the bonding, on the bonding bill. It's preserving current assets so they don't get in worse shape, because once these assets go away, once they're destroyed because we don't maintain them, they're much more expensive to me to rebuild and replace. And with that, I'll pass it over to John Halbeck, or Chip Halbeck and John Ford, and John can go off first and answer any questions we have and go forward from there.
Welcome to the committee, and if you'd introduce yourself, please.
Thank you. I'm John Ford. I'm the Executive Director of the Housing Redevelopment Authority and for the City of Albert Lea, Minnesota. And I am actually acting in that capacity much more today as the Executive Director of a small housing agency as opposed to the position I hold with our industry group in NARL. So speaking more from that angle, again, and the needs and the concerns we have in that area. And I appreciate the opportunity to be here this evening as well, man. I'd like to start off first, and I think it's important that I start off this way, by thanking, in general, the legislators of our state, our state representatives, the governor, and our partners over at Minnesota Housing for the work they did in setting aside the funding in 2007 through PARIF for public housing preservation. I can tell you that funding is going to be a very significant impact for many of the agencies who were fortunate enough to receive it. As Chip stated earlier, the St. Paul Housing Authority, for example, was able to avoid selling off some public housing units because they were allocated some of that funding to deal with some of their capital needs. And I'll talk a little bit about the sale of housing in a few minutes as well and kind of expand on some of the points that Chip made earlier. But I do really want to express the appreciation of our housing agencies for the opportunity to apply for those funding and to have that funding available. It's certainly not an end-all answer to the needs of capital or the capital needs of public housing programs in Minnesota. As Chip said, there are over 21,000 public housing units in the state. And I think more importantly than just looking at the number of units, we look at the number of Minnesotans that are housed by those. There's over 35,000 Minnesotans that reside in those units. It's important, too, going back to what Chip said earlier, as far as the chemistry of those individuals. Over 90% of the households are working poor families with children. There are elderly. There are disabled citizens. They are ultimately our most vulnerable people in our society. So it's important to understand the impact upon them as individuals and as citizens. The need is very high. The waiting lists in the state of Minnesota alone for public housing are over 30,000 applicants sitting on waiting lists because there are no additional units available. I go back to what Chip said earlier about construction of new public housing units. I think the last new public housing development really built in the state of Minnesota, if my history of it's correct, was 1986. There's been nothing new in public housing built since that time, simply because the funding hasn't been there. Some of the major issues, I go back also to what Chip talked about as far as operating funds. The past year and a half, we had some new regulatory issues that were put forth for public housing agencies regarding how those agencies manage their portfolios. And as part of that, HUD stated at the federal level exactly what we needed as a minimum amount of money to operate efficiently under the new management system, but then we're only funded at 84%. And so right away you see where the issue becomes. That's on the operating subsidy side. I go back to what Chip said also, and he's actually found some pretty good numbers, don't they? Several agencies, I'll tell you, over the last 6 years, at the current time, they're funded at about 74% through the capital program of what they were funded at 6 years ago. So for every dollar they got in capital fund money 6 years ago, they're getting 74 cents on that dollar now. And I'm sure everyone on this committee is aware of the increase in costs of construction that have come about, not only in our state but across this country. Increase of operational costs, it has just been enormous in the last 2 years alone because of the increase in costs of fuel and materials. So there's been a real gap that has continued to grow there in our ability to function as efficiently as HUD says we have to. I think it's very clear that it is HUD's obligation, it is the federal government's obligation to ensure that these programs are stable, but they have challenged that greatly over the last few years. I think that it's spelled out very clearly in the Housing Act of 1937 and in every housing act since that time. I think that that obligation is very clear, but for some reason they feel that that obligation is not necessary. And that is where we turn to local partnerships, local governments, as being the last step in the process for us, really. I'm going to refer also back to Chip's earlier statements about the sale of public housing units and why that's coming about. We have, and I'll give you an example of one community where they're facing that question right now, is in Mankato, where they have a public housing high-rise that's in need of about $2 million in capital improvements just to save the structure. Now, saving that structure at $2 million is much less than it would cost to build new. So very, very clearly, it would be about 3 to 4 times that cost to build it new. But when they've approached HUD, who again, and the federal government about how they're going to go about that, is the answer has been, if you don't have the funding, sell the units. So that's been the directive that's been given down at the federal level to the public housing authorities in response to these funding problems, if that's one of the answers that they provided us. You have to understand also that many of the small agencies, approximately 90% of the agencies in the state of Minnesota, are small housing agencies, which means that in most cases they have maybe one person that acts in a total administrative capacity. So they only have one administrative staff and one maintenance staff, which creates great capacity issues for them. And when you start restricting funds, you can see where the problem is. Where do you cut? It's difficult to cut as far as labor and maintenance and upkeep on the units because we're required by federal law to maintain a certain level. You can't cut the administrative side if you've only got one person. You've got nobody left to run the show. So a lot of those agencies are at a point where they just have no options left. And in some cases, when they're running out of that capacity, that's another point where HUD has said, if you don't have the capacity to administer, sell the unit. When they sell those units, the subsidy is lost. They're no longer affordable. They become market rate units, pure and simple, because HUD will not provide that subsidy once that unit leaves that annual contribution contract. It's a simple case of we cut so far, we're out of places to cut, and the only places that we can cut now will mean a loss of services and a loss of units. It's as simple as that, and it's as clear as that. And it really is also tied back, part of the problem with the shortfall is tied back to the funding formula that's been put out there. It's inconsistent for many agencies. So, for example, our agency, we actually, in comparison to 2 years ago, operating subsidy-wise, we actually came out ahead of the ballgame. Now, our capital funding has continued to decline. But operating subsidy-wise, we came out ahead. But many agencies, right up the road from us, 80 miles, have come out behind. There's an inconsistency in the funding. In the state of Minnesota, there are roughly 170 programs that deal with just public housing. And out of those, almost half of them saw a decline in the amount of operating subsidy from last year to this. And in that other half of the mix, there's probably another half of that group that saw no increase. So there's been no growth. And there is no money to replace the units when they're lost. And there is no money to replace those subsidies. There's none available. And those housing agencies, again, I go back to the question of why the state hasn't heard about the disposal of these units. It's as simple as those agencies simply were blindsided with it and didn't know where to turn. And there's the bottom line is to dispose, liquidate the units. And they're gone forever once they're gone. So, and we are working now with our colleagues across the state trying to help each other, and we always have, of course, but we have to seek out some pretty new and inventive ways of going about it, and again, we're limited by federal statutes to how we can go about that. So, and I'll entertain any questions or anything else I can do.
What happens, Mr. Ford, if you have a multi-tenant building and they say sell, the whole thing ends up going market rate?
Yes.
You don't sell the one unit, you have to sell the building.
No, you sell the entire property. Yep, sell the entire development.
In your case, who is the owner of the property?
In the case of our property, team, it is actually the HRA. The Housing Redevelopment Authority is actually what's called a political subdivision,
right,
and it is an independent entity, and we are the owners of the property.
It is conceivable that the city of Albert Lea could help fund the gap?
It, again, in some cases, but they've also seen some decreases in their levels of aid as well. And again, because of increased costs on their side, they've kind of stretched their tax dollars as well. So it's they don't have quite the gap that they had before. They have provided some support and so forth to our organization. We aren't, again, as tough a shape as a lot of our colleagues are, so we haven't asked for as much support as we could have, I suppose.
One other follow-up question. This is your question. How many of the units that are in this dilemma are owned by the public agency, and or how many are owned by a limited partnership or a for-profit? Private ownership or non-public ownership.
Yeah. And Chair Representative Peterson, with public housing, it is owned exclusively by public agencies. Now, a very small minority of those public agencies contract with for-profit or other companies to help manage it, but the public housing supply itself is owned by the public agency. Some public agencies also will enter into partnerships or relationships to develop other types of housing. Dakota County Community Development Agency is probably furthest along in that it has its public housing supply that it owns itself, but it works through limited partnerships and other investment mechanisms to develop additional housing for higher income people.
Mr. Ford, I just wanted to say something. I mean, we've certainly been aware in recent years that there's a risk. You know, the federal government has been going down that road for a while with the current administration. And even before then, it's been going on for a while. This has been good. But the level of... I guess I'm just thinking maybe we need some sort of reporting mechanism that helps us know when we're way underfunded with the PARA program or other mechanisms that we might have to help. I'm just wondering if this is obviously your organization. When you have your other hat on,
sure.
Your organization, are you all communicating with each other in a way that are you communicating with the federal government, with our own Minnesota Housing Finance Agency? It seems like in some ways the legislature, we need to have our ear to the grapevine there, or somehow be included in some communication.
Yes, Madam Chair, I agree with you completely on that. I think one of the things to understand the perspective from the public housing side of it is for several years, for many years, we've never had to rely on upon anybody but ourselves and upon subsidies that we were able to receive. So, and we've got a bunch of old timers in housing still, so they're a little bit slow to be seeking out those other answers or even in some cases how to reach out there. We have worked more closely, I think, over the last couple of years, developed more partnerships with Minnesota Housing, with groups like Minnesota Housing Partnership, to try to get that word out there. But I agree with you fully. I think that we do need to put it more back as far as providing more information to our state representatives so that they can help with that process. I do that locally with my own representatives. I can tell you that not all agencies do that and probably should.
And Mr. Ford, do you have a list for us, or could you provide us with a list of the 80 units that have already been sold and the 329 are at risk? Is that something your organization has? Is there anything off the top of your head for those in the city internet you could give us a little picture of where those might be?
Yeah, Madam Chair, without having time to look back at the numbers, we've got so many numbers we've been throwing around over the last few days that it's difficult for me to pinpoint. I can tell you that most of the units that have been sold off to this point, I would venture to say, have been in the greater Minnesota region.
If not, do you have any further comments?
Thank you for hearing the bill and taking it into consideration. And,
So I think the motion is then, if there's no objection, that we will hold this bill for possible inclusion in the report that this committee will be putting out on bonding. Probably, I guess, we'll be sending it out on Wednesday. No objection? Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
We have one more bill. While we're asking the Representative Moe to come forward, we have several minutes to be approved here. We're busy over the interim. We had a couple of meetings. Would like to move. Yes,
Madam. I will
move that. Which one? Okay, there's four committee hearings. So, Phil, do you want that one or the joint hearing?
Whichever.
Then Phil moves that the approval of the minutes from the four committees in November 14th, December 13th, January 14th, and January 30th.
Okay.
Any further discussion of those minutes? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails and those are adopted. We have one more group of minutes to approve. And this is Charlie Richardson. Did I see you one of those?
Sure. Is that the 28th?
Oh, that was a joint hearing, yeah.
I don't move.
The representative moves the approval of the joint hearing. June 28th. Any discussion? Not? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Are we going to move that all approved, no? Representative Moe, welcome. Yes, Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I guess that we're not. Do you want me to make a motion on this, or?
I think the motion will be the same, that it'll be held over to be included in the bill that we, the bonding bill that we sent forward. So go right ahead.
So I'll just go ahead. Members, I asked one of the previous presenters the leading question about the availability of capital resources for emergency shelters, homeless shelters in the state of Minnesota. And what we've heard and what many of us already know is that these resources aren't available. And Michael Dahl, who you'll hear from, will give a little bit more history about that. Specifically, in our area, some of you are on the Poverty Commission. We visited our current homeless shelter in Bemidji, which is an example of one of the shelters in greater Minnesota, I think pretty representative. And it's an old house right downtown. I am convinced when they finally vacate that house, it'll be condemned by the city. It's a very small, insufficient shelter for the needs we have in the area. It's called Hours to Serve House and Hospitality. The operating budget is $127,000 a year. With that, they're able to serve 350 people. They have a full-time director. They have countless volunteer staff from around the community, also from the primarily from the university, but also around the community. And that's, while that's very inspiring, they've had to turn away many people, 620 last year, including 245 children. And as you know, when I left Bemidji on Monday morning, it was 33 below zero. The high for the weekend was 20 below zero, and including Sunday morning, a temperature of 90 below zero wind chill. So we have families who literally are on the street in that kind of weather in northern Minnesota. The Hours to Serve House of Hospitality was forced, the board was forced to make the decision they will no longer take single adults. Because, with the prospect of turning away children, they never have a vacant bed. They have couches and everything. They're beyond their capacity all the time. So oftentimes these people are turned away with no place to go. Some sleep in the basement of a local church. Others sleep under the bridge or wherever else they can find. So we do have the good fortune, though, of having a very enterprising director and resourceful board in Bemidji to try to come up with a new location for our shelter. We're making some progress. But again, we came up against this roadblock, as many others have around the state, in that we don't have a capital source of funds from the state. However, Minnesota Housing Finance says that we are eligible. I don't believe we are, and they haven't made resources available to us or others in the past. So what this bonding request would do would set $10 million aside out of the bonding bill, appropriate $10 million for specifically for transitional and permanent housing projects around the state. As many of us know, there's a great need for this niche, for the first step to get people off of the streets. And in particular in our area, it would be a great help for us to try to make that expanded homeless shelter a reality. In fact, the DNR is proposed, it will be transferring title of property for us to do that. The city is contributing a large sum, but we are short. And this bonding request would make our project a reality in the future. With that, I'll turn it over to our favorite testifier, Michael Bell, who is expert witness on this and many other housing matters.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, happy Valentine's Day. My name is Michael Bell. I'm the executive director with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House File 2718. Before I jump into 2718, I want to express my support for Governor Pawlenty's proposal to get $30 million to address long-term homelessness and permanent supportive housing. There are thousands of people who are homeless for too long and too many times. The definition of long-term homeless are people who've been homeless for a year or more and or multiple times over 3 years. And there's definitely enough need out there to meet what the governor's request is, and I hope that you do so. It's because I want to end homelessness and the Coalition for the Homeless wants to end homelessness that we have to address that need. But we also have to address the need of people who are falling into homelessness today or who did a month ago. We have to address the needs of people who are coming to a shelter because they're in an immediate crisis, and we need to address the needs of people who need transitional support. Examples like victims of domestic violence, who transitional housing has been a national model to address that form of homelessness that we see. And so I am speaking in support of House File 2718 because it proposes $10 million that would be available to shelter, transitional housing, or permanent supportive housing, whatever the community needs is. We want to respect the fact that there are different needs across the state, different types of programs that can help, and different people that need that sort of help. And so that's what this bill would accomplish. I had handed out to the committee the Wilder Research Center survey on homelessness from 2006, and I just want to point to two of the statistics in there and then talk about how the coalition sees those issues. On the first page, you'll see that the overall distress in the homeless community is on the rise. The incidence of mental illness, substance abuse, traumatic brain injury are at levels that we hadn't seen before in the homeless community. Also, if you'll go to page, go to page 8, you'll see special populations, long-term homeless. The number of people who are long-term homeless is at 54% right now. Now, that relies on a definition of homelessness that has there's two points to it. One is you're either homeless for a year or more, or there's multiple times, four times over the past 3 years. And we didn't always define long-term homelessness that way. It's changed over the years. And before, Wilder used to ask, were you homeless for a year or more? So the numbers aren't completely congruent. But the number of people experiencing long-term homelessness has increased with each Wilder survey. That proves both the need for the governor's proposal to address long-term homelessness, but the need to stop it from growing any further. And that's what this bill will help address, by addressing the capital needs of those programs that help people from getting to the point of long-term homelessness. one last point I'll make is that there are different ways to serve people who are experiencing long-term homelessness. You can do so through permanent supportive housing, which is a critical need, but you can also do so through transitional housing, which is where most people experiencing long-term homelessness today receive their assistance, and many of them are able to get out of homelessness into permanent housing in the community successfully through that program as well. And so having noted that, I'll be welcome to questions, and thank you for the chance to testify before the committee.
Is this real? Questions, comments, committee members? I did have one question. And actually, maybe this is for Representative Moll. I wanted to just ask you, you indicated there's actually a little bit of controversy about whether or not the particular situation you're talking about can be funded currently, and are we funding it? And here we would be definitely funding it by the emergency shelter language.
Right.
What is the problem otherwise, Stephen?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and maybe Mr. Dahl can speak to this, that Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has been in touch with our and for some reason is alarmed by this bill because they say that these funds are available now, but they're not. I mean, there's nobody that has been able to access money from the state specifically for emergency shelter construction, and I'm not really sure where that's coming from, so I haven't had that conversation directly with her. Chair Hausman has directed her to, well, you have to talk to Representative Moll, because his experience that he has had in his community and others is to the contrary. And I think, and regardless, I guess I would also like to say that House File 2718, as Michael Dahl said, doesn't preclude the money from being used for other housing needs, but it says explicitly that it is available for emergency shelters, and regardless of whether they say that is available or not, it hasn't proved to be in practice.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the agency in prior years has supported some of the capital needs for emergency shelter through the Housing Trust Fund. I'm not aware of any cases where they've used bonding resources for that case. However, for the past 6 years, the priority for the MHSA and the administration has been focusing on long-term homelessness, and not just long-term homelessness, but a very particular fix on long-term homelessness, which is permanent supportive housing, so a particular model. And the language that this committee will see to address long-term homelessness has a very specific definition of the types of programs and the type of housing that can be that can access the bonding resources. We would simply like to have a flexible option, so that when there is a need that is shelter or transitional housing, that it's also eligible to be in the pipeline.
I guess one of the questions I might have is this $10 million going to do it? I mean, I can understand what you're saying about the three different categories that are here. They all seem, I think, the three categories, really important. How did you come up with $10 million? Is that adequate?
4 years ago, 2 years ago, the coalition did a survey of our members asking who could use. We just limited it to transitional housing capital resources, and a number of agencies responded both about what their need was and as far as number of units. They hadn't moved to the step of asking a public owner if they'd be willing to own the units, but that saying there was a need for additional capital resources, and $10 million was a safe amount to go for based on the responses of our members.
And how long ago was that?
This was before the session 2 years ago, before the last bonding session.
Okay, I think I heard you say at the beginning of this testimony that we have more people homeless than we ever have. So I'm just wondering if that number is adequate.
The number of people who are homeless has leveled off at what are historic levels. There may be a slight decrease But it's not a significant decrease in homelessness over the past 3 years.
Madam Chair, the author would gladly take an oral amendment from the chair about increasing the number of line 1.6, 1.21.
Well, you know, maybe that'll be in my... Any other questions, comments? I see we have somebody here from an HFA, and I'm wondering if you...
Madam Chair, I was going to say the same thing. I see
Tanya Ward here,
and she may want to respond on the capacity, the distribution potential, and the needs from their perspective.
So do you wish to testify this bill? Is there anybody else in the audience who wishes to testify this? I'm sorry I didn't ask for the last one. I'm sorry.
Welcome to the committee. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr with the Housing Finance Agency. And as you know, on Tuesday, we will be presenting information about the governor's request. And I had intended to address with more specificity some of the concerns. I do want to, and I will provide you on Tuesday with an exact list, but I do want to be clear that, in fact, the Housing Finance Agency has funded both emergency shelters and transitional housing over the years. Has funded, I believe, over 300 units of transitional housing. We funded, with capital bonding money, the Ramsey County shelter, family shelter, that's in Maplewood, about 6 years ago, I believe. We have funded a number of battered women's shelters over the years, and in fact can and do fund shelters with both Housing Trust Fund money, and in the past have funded it with shelters and transitional housing with capital bonding money as well. And as I said, I will give you an exact list on Tuesday. I didn't bring it with me today.
Excuse me, if I can interrupt you for just a second. Representative Moore, you're being called to come do a vote in room 5, so we'll just, if you don't mind, we'll carry on without you for a little while.
I'm sure you'll handle it.
Do you have one of your other authors on the bill here?
Let's see. One parting comment. I appreciate the committee's support. Thank you for coming forward. I'm sorry to put you in an awkward position. I guess I would ask that since, for whatever reason, has been difficult for homeless shelters in recent years, since in the last six, perhaps to get state support, I would think that this appropriating the money in this way would still allow for the governor's objectives to be met, as well as those emergency shelters. With that, thank you for
your time,
and I will hopefully be back for them.
Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry, interrupted you. Do you want to go forward?
I would prefer, actually, to make the case for the $30 million in the focusing when you have the bill in front of you on Tuesday. But let me just remind you that we have worked with a large group of stakeholders to develop a plan to try and end long-term homelessness by the end of the decade. That plan anticipates 4,000 housing opportunities being developed over about a 7-year period. The bonding request is a critical piece of that. We are talking about people... Let me just step back and say that we're trying to be very practical and realistic here. We know there are incredible demands on the state's budget for bonding proceeds. We know that we can't meet all of the needs, even in the housing area, let alone all of the other needs. So we have taken this approach of focusing on the people that have gotten the least focus over the years, the people who have been on the streets for over a year or multiple times over a period of time, the people who, over half of those people have mental health problems, many, many of them have chemical dependency problems. These are not your poster children that everybody wants to help. And so we have tried really hard to say, these folks are the very worst off of a lot of people who are having trouble, and we would like to address that problem first. which is at, and have a focus on that. At the same time, we asked for, and you were generous enough to fund the Housing Trust Fund at a considerable increase last year, which gets used for all sorts of low, very, very low income housing needs, including housing for people who are homeless but don't meet the definition of long-term homeless. We also asked for, and you were generous enough to provide us with, a doubling of the Family Homeless Prevention Program, which provides funding to get people out of shelters as quickly as possible and into permanent housing, which provides money so that people who are at risk of going into shelters will get the help that they need so that they don't go into a shelter to begin with. So I think that what has happened sometimes in these discussions is the idea that because we had a focus on long-term homeless and have focused our energies in the bonding bill in the last few years on long-term homeless, that has been to not do anything about any other housing needs, and that's simply untrue. So it is a matter of focus. We have definitely made it a long-term homelessness our top priority, but it's not been to the exclusion of other housing needs for very low income and homeless people. I just want to reiterate that there are other resources available. The bonding proceeds are not the only resource that's available, and we have over the years funded a considerable amount of emergency shelter and transitional housing.
Okay. Well, Representative Moe isn't here, but I do think there was some real issue that he was talking about. So hopefully, you know, there'll be time to talk about that further, maybe next when you come back next week. In fairness to him, I don't know that unless you know Representative Peterson, unless you know the details of that story, I think he's okay. Any other questions? Mr. Dahl, did you want to come back? I couldn't tell if you. Thank you, Mr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I actually don't, much of what Ms. Orr was saying, I agree with, that there needs to be, that what the agency can fund and what it does fund are different things. And the priority on long-term homelessness over the past 6 years has also been communicated as not being as responsive to the needs of other types of programs. Not that there isn't ever, that there aren't ever resources that are going there, but it has been, it has not been adequate to meet the need. And I'll just end by saying that the bill that we are proposing actually simply asks that there be flexible resources out there so we can respond to whichever case. And the bonding bills that have come forward over the past few years have not had that flexibility that we think best responds to what local needs are.
Okay, anything else? Representative Peterson? Okay. Thank you very much, then. The motion to have this bill held over for possible inclusion in the bonding bill that we will be sending forward is well, we'll leave it at that. Motion is accepted. Chair, now, just before we adjourn, I just want a couple quick things. There was a handout McNamara wanted to share with everyone, and I guess he left. So
he had to go
vote too. Okay, so let's pass this up. This is on. Oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be too. Oh, it's right. That's policy. He's on policy. Yeah. Okay. So this is some information on FEMA trailers and problems about with the chemical exposure that's happening there. And we had asked about this. I believe when we were down. I know Representative Schumper had to leave too, but we had asked about this question, I believe, down there.
Yeah. People have to leave.
Yeah, people needing to move out of their homes because of the chemicals that were being found there. And it wasn't apparently just in New Orleans. So, anyway, that's for us all to look at. Maybe when the. Maybe we can have a few minutes on that from Representative McNamara. I know he did some work on that. Unless there's any other comments or questions, I think we've got a business taken care of, but we'll move that the meeting be adjourned, and then hope you all have a good evening.